time for Extra Sauce with Greg Hill and Courtney Fallon. Now, here's Greg and Courtney.
We are at the new Davio's in the Seaport for this episode of Extra Sauce, at least part of it. And it's beautiful here, wouldn't you say?
View is fantastic. I'm sitting here distracted watching the planes land.
Well, I honestly, everything distracts you. Yeah. I mean, it could be a plane, it could be a butterfly, it could be a pencil on a table. We have a really good show, though. We're going to talk to Steve DiFilippo, who is the owner of Davio's. They're all over the country now. It's like a really great Massachusetts success story. And we're going to talk about Harpoon, who has brewed a Bruins beer, and it's all going to a great cause. And they got a Bruin to actually help them brew the beer. So
that probably was one of my favorite interviews that we've done on the show. Just the process and the options that are open to making a beer. And literally, you'll hear it. You can put just about anything into a beer, but every beer that Harpoon comes out is... it's so personal and it's so carefully crafted, and the story behind this specific beer is extra special.
Are you a beer drinker?
I'm allergic to beer, so oh. I used to like beer. I mean, like I'm a big fan of Stella. I'll do a Corona. I'm a big fan of Negra Modelo. Like the Spanish beers, those are great. But otherwise, other than that, I mean, I prefer tequila over.
And as long as we're here at Davio's, I should probably ask you about wine. Are you a big wine girl?
I love wine.
Really?
Yeah. So when I first got out of college, I worked at Free Press, the Moo at the 15 Beacon Hotel, and that they're known for their wine cellar, which is in the basement. It used to be the old Federalist, and their wine cellar is extravagant. It dates back to like the 1700s. Obviously, they don't have wine from the 1700s, yeah. But I did learn a lot about different wine varietals and different flavors. And you know, I prefer something that's more full-bodied, but spicier and light, and you know, something that's
so like white or red. Are you like?
See, the thing is, I like in the summer. I'm not really so much of a big rosé drinker. I feel like rosé just. I know that's like it's a summer drink. It's a chick drink, and I feel like it's too much fermented sugar, and it just gives you a headache if you're just overdoing it with the rosé. I love a really simple, crisp Pinot Grigio. I love that. Anything else other than that is just it starts to drag down, because I think that the heavier wines should be more of a red. And I love Pinot Noirs and Cabernets. And surprisingly, you would be surprised. I don't know if you know this, but everyone thinks that Napa Valley is the number one place to get a really good wine.
It's Chelsea. It's not Chelsea. Is it East Boston? No, what?
It's Sonoma County has the better terrain, or Tarawa, as they say.
Huh.
It's more dynamic, and a lot of the people there, if you ever get to go out to California, you'll see that, you know, most of the wines in Sonoma are just slightly cheaper out of inflation, simply because people believe that all the good wines come from Napa. But yeah, I think we learned in this episode about not only is there like a wine pairing scheme, but there's also you can also get an award to be a beer sommelier. So
that's right.
All right, I have a question for everyone. We're gonna do a quick lightning round. Everyone goes around and says, "What is the one food that pairs best with this Don't Poke the Bear Harpoon beer?"
Oh, for me, it's pizza.
Pizza.
It's that
okay.
Easy.
Stole it right out of my mouth.
What do you got, Mike?
I think popcorn and a beer at a game would be pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say a big fat dip. I mean, it's cool.
That's gross.
Is that gross?
How about a pretzel?
All right, I'll go pretzel. All right,
that's a good pretzel. What about the hockey community
I was definitely going to say a solid slice of just plain cheese, you know? That's the move. I mean, I feel like it's like bar pizza. You think bar pizza and beer?
Yeah. Don't sleep on beer nuts, though. I mean, that's an American classic, the beer nuts.
Sure. Well,
are beer nuts the same as, like...
They're peanuts, right?
Yeah, no, they're a brand. I mean,
beer nuts, bar nuts? Like, I don't know, is it coated with something different? I don't know.
Bar nuts, Spanish beer nuts, whatever, whichever one prefers. D's nuts, whatever you want.
Okay.
But one thing when you're pairing stuff is you're either trying to go like with like or sort of go opposite. an IPA, the hops, the bitterness, the bite of it goes really well with something like buffalo wings. You get the hot spiciness. You want a beer that stands up to it. I don't like a lagery kind of easy drinking beer with wings. I want my beer to match that intensity of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
The other times that that can go bad and you want to go the opposite direction, you would, if you're doing like a beer dinner, you would never want to pair a chocolate stout with a chocolate cake or a raspberry UFO with some raspberry dessert, because the dessert's going to be really sweet and delicious and the beer is going to be like, ugh.
Yeah.
You would want to do a chocolate beer with a vanilla dessert. You know what I'm saying? Because then the chocolate will taste appropriate. If you're trying to match intensities of sweetness, you're going to fail on the beer side if it's the ingredient that you're going with. So, you know, it's either you're going with like or you're kind of going to contrast. And the goal is whatever you eat, when you drink, you want the drink. And when you're done with the drink, you want to go back to the food. So the one makes you want the other. And that's how pairing works.
So in the wine world, you have a sommelier. Yeah. In the beer world, you have a Cicerone.
Cicerone, yeah.
Which is harder to get?
I would think sommelier. But, you know, there's far more beer styles to have to learn. But they're so different from one another that I feel like they're easier to grasp. Where if you're going to try to, find the difference between the terroir of one grape from another grape, and it's just a big red wine, that's minutia that like a lot of people just can't grasp.
Yeah.
Where beer, that's a stout, that's a porter. Well, what's the difference? Well, the stout is a stout porter. It's a roastier porter. I get it. And what other dark beers do we have? And when you start to find out, well, some are ales and some are lagers, the difference between an ale and a lager is the esteriness of the yeast. Now you start to taste yeast profiles, and then you realize that a bunch of beers are made with different yeasts that have characters that you can actually detect and taste and remember. And if you can do all that, and you're nerdy enough, you can pass those tests.
You could be a Cicerone.
You can be a Cicerone.
How many beers consumed to be a Cicerone, you think, in your life?
There's got to be a master class for this.
I took it, and I missed by one point.
No, you did not.
I had a cold, a whopping head cold the day of the test, and I did fine on the written. And then when we got to the tasting, like, there was this one beer that was a steam beer, and they say, well, what's the flaw in the steam beer? And I drank it. I'm like, this isn't a steam beer. It doesn't taste Anchor Steam is a steam beer. If they gave me Sam Lager, I would go, okay, that's pretty close to Anchor Steam. But this beer was some beer made in Vermont that was hazy and blonde and hoppy. And it didn't taste any. Just bought a steam beer off the shelf, and they dosed it with one of the off flavors that I was supposed to detect. And I was like, this isn't even the right beer. I got 0 points.
So this must be like the board exam. You know, it's like if you don't pass
like the
once,
medical boards. Yeah.
Well if you fail once, you can't go back and test it again.
They were like, yeah, come back, pay another fee and take the test and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what?
I'm all set.
I don't need to be a Cicerone. I think I know enough about beer to do my job pretty well.
Yeah, do you remember what the...
I don't remember the name.
I knew you didn't, and that's why you said it.
You walk into a book, like, oh, hey.
Why don't you go back to... Go back to staring at the airplanes, watch the airplanes landing, and we'll take a break, and then we'll come back from the new Davio's in the seaport, and we'll talk about meatballs and sausage on Extra Sauce. We are in the seaport this week for Extra Sauce at the brand new Davio's on Fan Pier with Steve DiFilippo. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having us here.
Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Whatever. What a view, huh? Is this unbelievable?
It really is.
And I could sit here all day and just look at the planes landing and everything.
This is a big restaurant.
Yeah.
How many square feet?
Well, it's about 16,000. So what it is it's a normal Davio's downstairs. What's different here is the upstairs, where we have this whole function facility. We have a bar up here. We have four private rooms, and that's really the difference.
Weddings and
so we have a lot of weddings booked. We have a lot of private parties. You've had parties here. I mean, it's been really going well here. It's fantastic.
How do you, when you're deciding where your next Davio's is going to be, how many do you have now?
There's 12.
12 Davios. Right. When you're deciding, like when you were deciding Seaport, what made you decide, like what do you look at when it comes to making the decision?
Well,
to
I always try to put restaurants where the people are. It's kind of my thing, you know,
because
I want to, you know, there's
seems
always
like
that
good logic.
Well, there's always that one restaurant in the middle of nowhere that people, you know, drive 2 hours to, you know, and it's not something that I have ever done. So what's great about the Seaport is, you know, it's the first time in our lives that Boston really has two distinct areas that are very, very busy, like the Back Bay where Davio's is, and now we have the Seaport. So when we looked at this location, we saw that it's a very busy area at night, busy in the summer, you know, because Back Bay kind of slows up in the summer. So now we'll have a restaurant here in the summer that has an outdoor patio. And then, you know, the functions are just on fire. I mean, Back Bay, we're sold out all the time on these parties. So we saw that as a big thing here, too.
Did you have to stop and think about, all right, if we open up in the Seaport, is that going to hurt our business at the original Davio's?
Right. I mean, that was a major concern. You know, we really thought about it. And then I started to go around to the restaurants here, and I didn't recognize anybody. I go to a lot of these restaurants, and it's just a different guest. It's a different person. It's Boston finally did it. We have two distinct areas.
It is it's amazing when you think about how long it took to get here.
Right. I mean, we're sitting
as
in a building.
City, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this where we're sitting right now was nothing just 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think pretty close to here was the legendary Pier 4, which
right there.
Probably...
Right, see that grass knoll over there? I know we're on the radio, you can't see it, but that's where Pier 4 was, right there.
Which I'm sure you went to for special occasions when you were a kid. And
right. Well, we're sitting in the Athanas room. We named this room after Anthony Athanas because he was one of my early mentors. And when I was a kid and my parents would take me to Pier 4, he was always at the door.
Yeah,
right?
Always.
White hair. And I said to my dad, I was, you know, he always tells the story. I was maybe 10 or 12, whatever. And I said to him, Dad, I want to be that guy.
You are.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be Anthony Athanas, but he was a legend. I mean, he was the guy. I mean, that restaurant was the number one restaurant in the country at one
for
time.
A long, long
for a
time.
Long time.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the burbs, and when my parents had like their anniversary, they'd drive into the big city and go to Pier 4 because that was the place to go to.
Yeah.
Do you have a restaurant background growing up?
Oh, sure. Well, no, not really. I mean, I have a cooking background with my mom. My mom was a great cook. She was a Portuguese lady, and she learned a lot of cooking from my Italian grandmother. In fact, it's kind of funny that my Italian grandmother, Nana, would not teach my Portuguese mom any of the Di Filippo specials until they were married, right? So they were engaged for, you know, a year or something, and my dad kept saying, you know, Mom, you know, when are you going to teach Jenny how to make the meatballs and the sauce until you're married, Anthony, until you're married? After the marriage, they drove to Florida for honeymoon. She came back, and she literally just moved in with my parents for like a month to teach my mom how to make the stuff. You know?
So how'd you end up getting into restaurants?
Well, I was fortunate. My parents traveled a lot as a kid. You know, they used to go away, and they used to like to eat out to restaurants. So I had the background of cooking with my mom and then going out to restaurants, and I just did love being in restaurants. I used to love going, and I used to always get in a lot of trouble. Like, we'd be in a hotel somewhere, and you know, my parents would get a call, you know, we've got this kid in the back of the kitchen. I would go and get lost and you know, look at what's going on behind the scenes. You know, I used to love to do that, you know, and it's something that, you know, I think it really helped me.
What was your first restaurant job?
I was a busboy at Seaside and Faneuil Hall. In fact, I was a coffee clerk. That was my first job. I got promoted to busboy, and that, you know, I was 17 years old, and that's where it all started.
I know from experience there, because my father, we owned a restaurant that's still there for 40 years. My father hired me and fired me from the restaurant twice. Didn't cover my shift. So what is the best part about having such an establishment like Davio's? I mean, when you say the name Davio's, you know, right off the top of your head, fine dining, grand wine list, just really one of the classier, really top-notch restaurants in Boston.
Well, you know, there's pressure with that. It comes every day. I mean, I still remember when we were on Newbury Street and we had 15 people in the company. You know, we had 3,500 square feet. I was the chef, general manager. I mean, we had again, 15 people. Now we have over 1,000 people. So, you know, I never forgot where I came from, and I think about it every day. You know, and our food is good and stuff, but I really think the difference here is our hospitality. It's how we take care of our guests and how we remember people. And you know, like when Greg Hill comes in, you know, he's he is just very, very difficult to take care of. And, you know, we really try to make sure he's happy, you know. So
my next question is, yes. I have to ask you about your sausage.
You know, I love it when women ask me about my sausage.
I have to
ask
you,
this was a family radio station.
Well, you were talking about Greg Hill, of course. Yeah. It pops up to Greg goes out to eat a lot. Mm-hmm. He really needs to be on the Davio sausage because it's an Awaken 180 sausage, and this is something that's completely different. Awaken 180, of course, one of the best premier weight loss centers in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of it. Please tell me about, you know, this famous sausage.
Yeah, well, we started Awaken 180. I've been on it for a couple years now. I started, I lost 35 pounds, and I followed them. I follow the whole thing really well. So we developed a sausage with them, and we sell it in a lot of stores, and we sell it here at the restaurants. I'm not sure, you know, Greg ever has had my sausage.
I don't think I have.
Yeah,
I think I could say I have it. But
this is like a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah,
I know.
Steve Sausage. It's a
sweaty ball.
Yeah, it's
exactly.
Yeah. But you're big. I mean, you actually worked with Awaken 180 and developed a menu here.
Yes.
That you can order. When it comes to the menu,
it's actually a great menu, Greg. I mean, you know, there's no sugar, there's no carbs. When you order from that menu, you're ordering an amazing food. And it's, you know, it's Davio's food. We just make it special. We follow the teachings of Awaken 180. And that's the difference.
When you're dining out, what's your biggest pet peeve? When you go somewhere, when it comes to service, what's your biggest pet peeve?
You know,
what makes you say the service here is, you know, not what I want?
Well, I think people like to be recognized. You know, I live on the North Shore, and I go to restaurants all the time in the North Shore, you know, and I'm obviously this is what I do, you know, and this restaurants that I go to all the time, they'd have no idea who I am. Yeah. It is, and it just blows my mind. Like, they just don't pay.
After you introduce yourself like 5 times and then they still don't remember, that is a huge pet peeve.
And the server will come over and go, oh, first time eating here? And I was here last Tuesday. Yeah. You know, and I was like, you know, and I literally live 2 miles from this place and they have no idea. You know, and not that I want to, you know, because I'm who I am, I'm a restaurant guy. It's not nothing to do with that. It's just they don't pay attention.
And how do you do that here? Do you guys have guest notes on people?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, my God. We incentivize all the servers, bussers, food runners, everybody to put notes in the computer at the door. And all our restaurants speak to each other. So if you come to this one and you like a certain table, all our restaurants have similar tables like that. And we make sure if you go to Linfield or you go to Foxborough, you're going to have the same treatment.
How hard is it to find people?
Though you text me when you come in.
Well,
so,
I text you,
know,
you yeah.
yeah you,
I'm
you
always hoping that I'm going to get a comp, but it never happens. But is it really hard to find people now?
Well, you know, it is and it isn't. You know, we try to find people who want to serve. You know, to me, this is a calling, this business. You know, we work nights, weekends, and holidays. You have to love this thing. And we'll take somebody from any background. I really don't care. You know, long as you love people and you want to do this. So that's the thing. And I think sometimes other restaurants, they look at the resume and they, well, you really haven't worked in many upscale restaurants. I honestly don't care. You know, I really care about the person. And that's the thing. We train people really well. You know, it takes 3 weeks to become a server here. You know, and bussers, food runners, we have an incredible training program.
You've always been known, Davio's has always been known for the steak and cheese egg rolls.
Right.
How did you guys, like, whose idea was that?
Really?
How did
egg
you,
rolls? They're spring rolls,
spring
first
rolls,
of all.
Spring
okay.
rolls.
Can
you
believe
you
us?
Know, you know,
he sees the food. He just
eats
it.
I don't worry about
it. Also, too, he doesn't look at menus because they just send him out food. So that's why, you know, he has to incorporate.
You know, the smarter
restaurant girl over here.
He likes a big ribeye, actually. But,
yeah, I do like a ribeye.
No, but the difference, you know, spring rolls are much crispier. Egg rolls are soggier.
Hold on.
You know.
Don't you think ribeye is the most tasty steak?
No
the,
question.
When it
no
comes
question.
To flavor, most
no question,
flavor. Okay.
No question.
Anyway, so this
and our ribeye actually has a lot of tenderness. I think sometimes ribeyes can be a little tough. So that's what's good about our brand meat. It's fantastic.
And you should always order a piece of beef rare, correct?
Medium rare. You know, I think rare sometimes can be just a little too rare. I like it more medium rare.
All right, so the spring rolls. Whose idea was that? How that?
Well,
happen?
I started actually Philadelphia. Our Davio's there. Obviously, a Philly cheesesteak spring roll started there. And one of our original chefs from 20 years ago. So we brought it to Boston after a number of years, and we started doing it in the Back Bay restaurant. And actually, Jonathan Kraft was sitting at a table one night, and he said to me, you know, Steve, you should sell these spring rolls to, like, someone else. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you know, like, in stores, or you could, this could sell the whole country. You could sell these everywhere. And I, you know, Jonathan, as you know, is probably the smartest guy that I've ever met. And, you know, kind of, I thought, you know, Jonathan, that's a great idea, but I have no idea how to do that, you know. So for about 6 months, it was bugging me. And then I met Stephanie Hearn, and she has a company on the South Shore, and I talked to her about the idea. And she said, yeah, we can make your spring rolls. And then we did, and the first account was Gillette Stadium. I went to see Jonathan, and they took him into the stadium, and then from there, we started selling them to hotels and country clubs, and then we went to a retail package, and now we're in over 7,000 stores around the country.
And it's now, when you come to Davio's, you can get the chicken parm spring roll.
Well, that was
you
the thing.
You can get the,
right.
the buffalo chicken.
We added flavors. We've got 6 different flavors now, because when you go into stores, they didn't want to have one SKU. They want us to have a whole line of them.
I want you to do a bolognese one.
Yes, yes. This is another thing that happens all the time. People love to tell me what I should do in our business. You know, I think maybe you should be a little nicer to people that call you in the morning. You know, people love
just to suggest something. You don't have to.
Restaurant
do
people,
it.
For some reason, we always get suggestions.
Everybody knows
You know what? It's
better.
A little dark in the restaurant. It should be a little lighter. Oh, actually, you know what's too light? You
turn
know,
the
too
music
dark.
Up.
Yeah, no, it's
turn
like
the
every,
music down.
Yeah, it's always you know. It doesn't matter. You know, people love to tell us it's okay. You know. You know, we'll come up with it for you.
There's nothing worse, in terms of speaking of restaurant pet peeves, than when you have rowdy children running around the restaurant. Like, I don't, is there anything worse than like little kids?
Right.
Like,
but you know, what am I supposed to do?
I've got emails into the servers.
No, but I have emails from people like, there's like, we can't believe that you accepted that at Davio's. You let those kids run around. What are we supposed to do? You know, yeah. I mean, you know. We talk to the parents, you know. We just had your kid over there, you know. Oh yeah. And they just keep eating. You know what? You know, we're supposed to ask them to leave, you know. And people don't understand that. It's so much we can do. You know?
You've been in this business so long. What do you think of Yelp?
Yelp is the worst.
My father hates. There is nothing that he hates more than a Yelper.
Well,
a bad Yelper.
Well, in my book, it's all about the guest. I talk about Yelp, and I think it's probably one of the worst things that's ever happened to our industry. And I'll tell you why. It's taken the guest away from us. They don't tell us anymore. They go online and they tell the world before they tell us. And I always say to people, look, please go to the owner or the manager of that restaurant first. You know, tell them what went wrong. We want to know.
You don't think I want to fix it?
I want to fix it. I want you to be happy, but. Give me a chance first. Now, if we mess that up, that one chance you give us, then go tell the world. But tell me first. You know, it's actually backwards. They go tell Yelp, and then we get in touch with them. You know, that's not fair. You know, it's just not fair. And the other thing is, we've caught competitors on Yelp. Yeah. We've had, I hate to say it, but, you know, some past employees that were on there, you know, who have a personal vendetta. You know, that's not always true. And that's what's very frustrating. We've even caught people who weren't even here.
I think your meatballs are great.
Thank you.
Now I'm talking about
my balls.
You got a hint for people who want to make meatballs at home? It's a hard thing to do to get them right. What's a hint?
Well, I'll tell you two things. One is make the mix the day before you make them. So if you're going to you want to have them on Sunday, make the mix on Saturday. Huh. Because what happens is overnight, as all the flavors will congeal in there and the mix will becomes really, really happy. You know, because what happens is if you just make it and then cook them, the flavors aren't together as much as they would be overnight if you made the mix first. So that's number one. The other thing is when you do make the mix and you're going to put breadcrumbs in there, always take the breadcrumbs and soak them in milk. So the milk, it becomes a tenderizer. It tenderizes the milk, and it just adds so much more flavor, to the thing. So marinate the meat the night before, and then make sure you do the milk. It's fairly important. And then the other thing is after we cook them, we actually fry them up, and we put them in our sauce for about 3 hours. And that actually makes me even more soft. So the whole recipe is in the book. So
well, just make sure that you give it to Greg because he loves cooking at home.
Yeah.
We had Aria Trattoria Massimo on the show last week, and he was saying that he doesn't put pork in his meatballs. Does some people do beef, veal, and pork?
That's what we do. Yes.
Okay.
All three.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any difference in your opinion of?
I do. I think it's important to have a third, a third, a third. That's what we've always done. And you know, I'm sure his meatballs are great, but that's how we've always done it. And you know, that's what's great about meatballs. There's so many different ways to do them.
I'm so glad that we are getting into a lengthy discussion about your sausage and your meatballs.
Thank you.
So I also want to help everybody out, because I think getting a reservation sometimes during busy times, whether it's Valentine's Day or Friday or Saturday night, is hard for people. What's the secret? What do you think the secret is to getting a reservation somewhere?
Well, you can listen to this too. Don't wait till you're on the way to the restaurant to call. You know, I mean, you know, he's outside at Foxborough before a game.
I'm not talking about a Patriots game.
I'm like, really? You know, the schedule's like 6 months in advance. You didn't know you were going to the game. So I also tell people, you know, try to think ahead. You know, look at next week, 2 weeks from now. You know, just get a reservation. Don't wait till the last minute. You know, that's what. It's easy if you just plan a little bit.
Do people still tip the host, the maitre d', to let him in? Or
No, I hope not.
That doesn't happen
anymore. No, I hope not. We're not really.
That's
the way really
my grandfather used to do it.
Yeah, that's more of kind of a Vegas thing, right?
Yeah.
We don't do that. We don't.
Well, because this show is called Extra Sauce, what is what are the signature sauces that you guys make in house? And I mean, are you guys heavy on? I don't think you're too heavy on pasta either.
Yeah. No, we actually have a lot of pasta. We make all our pasta is fresh here. We actually make them fresh and cook them to order for everyone, which is actually a big deal. A lot of restaurants cook them in the morning, the pasta, and they dunk it, and before you get, that's why it's soggy. Ours is really al dente. In fact, sometimes our pasta comes back because it's too hard. Guests aren't used to the correct cooked pasta, so we don't, you know, it's fine. We'll cook it more. But my thing is, I love San Marzano red sauce. You know, fresh
from the can.
Yeah, our marinara is really good here, so because good. We buy Italian tomatoes from San Marzano, and they don't have the acidity that California tomatoes have. So even though we're not a red sauce restaurant, we make a heck of a red sauce. It really is. And, of course, our bolognese is really good. You know, we have a really, really good bolognese that I'm really proud of.
So if you're not dining at Davio's and you could only eat at one restaurant in Massachusetts, what would it be?
I like Toro in the South End. Because I love Barcelona. It's one of my favorite cities to go to. And I think Ken Oranger and Jamie have really captured Barcelona. When you go to Toro, it is really fabulous. And they've kept it fresh. I mean, the restaurant's been there a long time now, and they still have the lousy silverware and the lousy plates, and it's casual as heck. But that's Barcelona. That's okay. You know, the food is fantastic.
And by the way, the fact that there's now a Davio's at the airport and that there's now good food at Logan Airport might be the greatest miracle in Massachusetts. You remember you used to go to Logan, you couldn't get anything.
Well,
good.
I think we got to thank Steve Karp and Marketplace. They really came in the last 2 years and really transform the airport. You know, we're there. Jody Adams is there. Michael Schlau is there. I mean, there's a lot of great restaurants now at our airport, and I think we should be really proud of that.
And if they haven't read it, they should read your book.
Yes, it's all about the guests. You know, the book's been out now a long time, and I'm really proud of it. And I think, you know, I still get emails from people all over the country that read it, and because my email's right in there, and I love when people get back to me, and I'm really proud of it, because it's not just about restaurants. I talk about really hospitality, and because let's face it, every industry today needs hospitality. I don't care if you're a lawyer or a doctor or a radio host. It's all about customers.
It's all about the customer. You know? It's all about the client. It's all about the guests.
Right.
Feeling Greg's signature question, but if you could have one sauce and only one sauce for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I think it would be the marinara, because the sauce that we make, the San Marzano, was probably the first thing I learned from my grandmother, how to make the correct sauce, and using Italian San Marzano tomatoes. And of course, the meatballs, the bolognese, everything has that as we go on to all the other. It's kind of like the baby sauce that becomes all the other sauces. So you have to have a really good marinara. And that's something that I love. Never get tired of it.
It's a very common thread between all the Italian restaurants that we've been asking on the show so far. The best sauce is either their grandmother's Sunday sauce or marinara. So.
And by the way, we call it a sauce, not a gravy.
Yeah, what's the deal with
that? The gravy was, you know, all the Italians that came over from Italy, they wanted to be American. So America had gravy, right? They had, you know, turkey gravy. So they started calling their sauce gravy.
But it's really sauce.
It's sauce. My family never did that. My Italian grandmother never called it a gravy. I don't know if it's a Sicilian thing or something, but we like to call it a sauce.
Well, Steve DiFilippo, thanks for having us here. We're at the new Davio's. It's in the Seaport. If you come in, try to give Steve some notice. He doesn't want you to show last minute. But get over here. Open for lunch and for dinner.
Yeah, and Sunday brunch, too, by the way. And then the patio, wait till that opens up in April. Very excited about that.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about a new beer that pays homage to one of our sports franchises here in the city of Boston.
Now back to Extra Sauce with Greg Hill and Courtney Fallon on WEEI.
With the Bruins at the top of the Eastern Conference, you may want to celebrate with a beer, and the choice should probably be the latest offering from Harpoon, which is called Don't Poke the Bear, and which was brewed with the help of the unofficial mayor of Walpole, Chris Wagner from the Bruins. And with us right now on Extra Sauce to talk about it is Greg Moon from Harpoon and Mike Griffin from the Corey C. Griffin Foundation, who will get the proceeds from Don't Poke the Bear. Guys, thanks for being there.
Thanks for having us.
So, Greg, I'll start with you.
Sure.
Why Don't Poke the Bear? Why the Bruins?
Oh, you know, I guess it was a few years ago that actually you could reach out to professional athletes and co-brand alcoholic beverages with them. Before that, and you had to be retired, really, to talk to an athlete. And I don't know if the laws changed or the rules changed.
No, Greg Hill just changed everything.
It was my former coworker, Lyndon Myers.
Made a phone call.
He stepped in and said, listen, everyone's got to talk to me first.
So we've been doing a lot of local collaborations. I don't remember the Dunkin' Donuts porter that we did. We have a sponsorship with the Garden, and the Garden is a Bruins house. So we said, hey, is there a possibility of working with a player, and you know, hopefully a local player? And they've got a couple on the team, and you know, Chris Wagner jumped at the opportunity. He loves the beer. We love to have him, and you know, he had a great charity to work with. So everything that Harpoon sort of stands for, and we're New England, we're local, we're employee owned, we like to work with local companies, and we're incredibly charitable. I was talking to you when I came in about, like, the first time we met. Greg used to do this thing, the Walk for Change. That was an insane thing. Where did you walk from?
You used to walk from Worcester to Boston.
Boston.
That was like 20, it was 20 years and 30 pounds ago.
Yeah, and how many beers did you drink along the way?
A lot. Of Harpoon.
And Harpoon was your sponsor.
Yeah. You had to have been drunk to do that.
Oh, my God. It was. Definitely. And I met LB then, and he was, oh, my God, he was funny. And that was an incredible experience. Just like, wow, you can make a difference, and you were a big part of that. And I think that shaped a lot of the culture at Harpoon anyway. I don't remember us doing a whole lot of charity before that. And then we became the Pan Mass Challenge beer sponsor.
Yeah.
One of my favorite events.
It's just like, why can't you work for win-win-wins? Like,
Everybody wins.
It's a win for Bruins fans because they get to drink this cool beer with Chris Wagner's likeness on the label, and it tastes great, and you can feel good about it because the proceeds go to the, you know, Corey Griffin Foundation. So
I want to find out a little bit about the beer, but the Corey Griffin Foundation is near and dear to my heart. And I want you, Mike, to just tell a little story about your brother and what you guys have done to honor his legacy.
Yeah, no, thanks for having us again. And I think you've gotten dragged to a few events, so you kind of, Greg knows what it's all about, but the Corey C. Griffin Foundation really started after an extension of the good work my brother was doing when he was here with us. We started after his tragic passing. Actually, the day he passed away, he'd raised $100,000 for Pete Frades and his family, and who, in my opinion, is the, you know, if there's a Mount Rushmore of, you know, great families and individual inspirational individuals, he'd be the top of the list in Boston, at least if you ask me. But my brother's, you know, gift, you know, back to the world was, you know, he'd become unbelievably close with a couple individuals, and if someone were to need help, he was, you know, quickly there to come to aid, whether, you know, just helping him a nudge, financial or whatever it was, and the foundation is really an extension of that. So Right now, we partner with Boston's leading institutions, whether it's the Ron Burton Training Village, St. John Paul Catholic Academy. We have a partnership with Boston Children's Hospital right now, where we're building an extended stay facility with children. So if you have a kid with an acute illness and they're going to be in Children's for months on end, a lot of the families can't afford, to stay with the children in need. So we've built the extended stay facility. It's going to house those kids so their parents can stay close to the kids, while they're getting operated and going through these difficult times. But really, that's, what we're up to so far. And in our big differentiator, I think, from other foundations, or what we think is a differentiation, is we talk about experiential philanthropy. So, instead of going to a lot of these charity events where there's a rubber chicken dinner and a white tablecloth, my brother would not be happy if we were making events that, people felt like they had to go to. So we do two events a year. One's called Corey Fest. It's a 1,000
great party.
Yeah, 28.
Who's the band this year?
Still up in the
Are
air.
You country again? Or?
They're probably going to be country again. Yeah. We had Old Dominion play. We've had Cole Swindell play.
It was great last year.
Low Cash. Yeah, there should be plenty of these beers drank at that event. There's never a doubt in that. And we do a 1,000 person black tie ball called the Boston Winter Ball as well. Which is, we actually just raised, had our biggest year yet. We've raised, at that event in a single night, no kids over, 35 years old, raised $1.6 million in a night at a black tie event.
Wow. That's amazing. Wow. Amazing. Well, your brother was a pretty good hockey player. And you end up, in the case of somebody like Chris Wagner, having guys, NHL guys, who step up all the time to help the foundation.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. This was a win-win-win for us, just like you said, Greg. And my brother had grown up playing hockey, local hockey, with Wags. My dad was the coach of all these nuts on a group called the Cape Cod Whalers. There was 11 kids from that team who went to the NHL. And when we started, pretty good team. I was a bench warmer on the team. Yeah. I served the bench minors when my dad would yell at the refs. So. But really, when we started the foundation, a lot of these kids were in the NHL and asking how they could help. And so we started a NHL ambassador program where we'd have this little party and would see if we can get, my brother's initials on these hats on, after a few interviews on games. And couldn't believe, the response that we got from all of the NHL players. And, Wags really went above and beyond, not just wearing the hats. He's one of those kids who's just constantly asking, what can I do more to help? And, Harpoon, we're so lucky to have Harpoon in the city, right? As civically minded as they are. Through a family, we know Dan Canary well, just always giving back. This is like the third charity event that Harpoon stepped up
Amazing.
On. Just really, the city's really lucky to have him and lucky to have, I think hockey guys are, a special breed as well. Not only is Wags get involved, but, on other sports teams, you'd be hard pressed to get, a few guys to come to this event. You got the whole team almost coming.
Oh, the Bruins are by far. I mean, they are involved in everything, and a lot of it you don't even know about, so this is Don't Poke the Bear is a black and golden ale.
Exactly.
What's a black and golden ale?
Well, a golden ale, right? It's a hockey beer, right? Molson Golden, Labatt's Blue, all these. These beers, golden ales they tend to try to mimic lager beers, right? So it's an easy drinking beer. It's a beer. Most of what Harpoon sells are the hoppy IPAs of the world and super flavorful beers. Not something dry, crisp, easy to drink, light in color. Well, can you do a beer like that that's also a little bit special? And also, could we tie it into, so we got the gold, right?
Yeah.
Just put a little space between the N at the end of it. Can we get some black in there? And how are we going to do that? Well, the brewer, Ethan Edelston, he's like, well, we could use black honey. I'd never heard of black honey.
I never have either.
Right. I've heard of black sand and volcanoes. So unless there's like, you know, a volcano beehive, I don't know. I want to keep those bees, those killer bees, you know, far away from me.
I didn't think racism existed in the bee world. No. But apparently,
does it come naturally or is it like infused with something?
I am not a bee expert, but I tell you, when I drink this beer, I can not only taste the black honey.
Yeah.
I can taste that the bees were in the melon patch the day before they made that black honey. Can you taste that?
That's a beer summer. Right,
I'm going to taste it right now.
No, you can't.
So
black honey gives it a little bit of specialness, a little sweetness.
It is sweet.
And we also add this golden malt from the UK that makes it a little bit biscuity. But really what you're drinking there is an incredibly crushable, as close as we can make to a lager-style beer, but with a lot more flavor than your typical domestic lager.
And what did Chris Wagner do? Like, I mean, was he... Oh, we put him to work.
These bags of malt are not light.
Lucky he didn't get hurt. And it's probably not covered in the contract.
Pro athlete can lift it. You know, you and I, maybe not. But and you got to dump the bags of malt in. You got the jars of honey, which... Those are easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was up and down the stairs. He threw his shoulders into it.
He worked for it.
It was a fun day.
There's, I think, over 130 breweries in Massachusetts now.
Oh my God.
Has that helped or hurt Harpoon?
you would think that everybody excited about beer would sort of, at least in the craft category, grow the craft category. It's that category's grown a little bit, and now it's just far more people, and it's, you know, it's like...
So it's a good thing. Well, all these breweries are a good thing.
I don't know. Remember the swimming pool the above-ground swimming pool you had when you were a kid, and all your relatives came over and everyone was in the pool?
Somebody ended up getting sick. There was less water. Yeah.
I love the creativity and the variety of what people are doing. What upsets me a little bit is it's when it's like a venture capitalist or some big money guy who just opens or buys, acquires a brewery.
Yeah, like the tequila market is getting completely oversaturated.
They suck the heart and soul out of what craft is all about. Yeah. And you know, if you look at Harpoon, we kind of stand as this employee-owned company that in a sea of money. The people are just like, I have all this money. What am I going to do with it? Park it in brewing. You'll be fine.
And you guys are 100% employee-owned.
Yes. Yeah. Well, essentially, yeah. We're 50% ESOP, and the other 50 is Dan, who is an employee. So, yeah, we're 100% employee-owned.
In the process of making this beer, how involved were you and were Chris in terms of, like, hey, these are the options of the certain flavors that we can roll out for this special beer? Or was it like already pre-planned, pre-noticed, like kind of the beer sommeliers behind the scene were like, okay, we're going to dream up. We got to make a beer that's just specifically this flavor and that taste. Or were there options?
There were every option in the world, really.
So jurisdiction was it to nail down?
So you say, you know, and we have, if you look at the roster of beers we've made, it's remarkable. Like we put everything in beers. And I shouldn't talk about it, but, you know, we're going to do a collaboration with Mike's Pastry from the North End.
Oh, you are. No way.
Another local company. Those guys are great. And what can you imagine us throwing in beer from the North End? So, everything's on the table. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, not only Chris, but the brewers, everyone's like, we want a beer. If we're going to raise some money and we're going to have, you know, not everything is about look what I can do and look at how hoppy this beer can be or look at how much alcohol. We made a beer one time. They called it Interrobang, which is when you put a exclamation point next to a question mark. Right?
Or it's asking the wrong
question. Yeah. That's what that's called. It's like, what?
It was
the beer was 18% ABV.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, espresso stout. Like, if you want to get extreme,
yeah,
that beer was extreme. But
if you don't want to sleep for 2 weeks, then that's your go-to.
Greg was drinking those on his run from Worcester to Boston.
Oh, my God.
then intermittently someone passing him an espresso martini.
And, like, people still come up to me, that Interrobang, that stuff was crazy. That wasn't what this was about. This is about friendship and sitting down and drinking some beers and watching the game. You want a beer, you can watch the game and drink a few of.
What's the beer, when you're talking to people about Harpoon, what's the beer they ask you to bring back the most?
This time of year, I get Long Thaw. So Long Thaw was a white IPA. So we make UFO white, right? And that's got orange and coriander in it. And then we make Harpoon IPA, which is, has hops in it. So, you know, it's kind of like, put your peanut butter in my chocolate and you get a Reese's Pieces, Reese's peanut butter cup. Long Thaw was that. And boy, it had its fans. It was a hazy, like the New England styles now that everyone's crazy about. This was back kind of before that even took off. And it was hazy in the fact that it was a half heffy, you know, or white beer, which is a heffy with spices added to it.
You also brought a cider into the studio. So, interesting tidbit, not that anyone actually cares, but I found out recently I'm allergic to hops. It's not gluten. So I cannot drink beer. I can only drink hard seltzer and hard ciders. And you had mentioned that you brought this in, and it's a hard cider with a hard seltzer like...
Seltzer-like cider, yeah.
Cider. Okay, so tell me about it, because I'm dying to try it.
Yeah, this, okay, you're going to love
right.
this.
Ooh,
so,
ASMR.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So
all right.
City Roots, it's naturally gluten-free because it's made with all local apple juice. Those apples come from the Harvard, Mass area. They press those apples into juice. We take that juice and we ferment it. And that's it. So if you look at the ingredients on it, it says fermented apple juice. That means there's no sulfites. There's no back sweetener. It's not from concentrate. This is about an all-natural, least produced thing we do. And it tastes the way it tastes because the apples, the blend of apples we use.
I was just going to say, I literally, when you said that these were from Western Mass or Central Mass, I get like a hint of nostalgia. Back when I used to go apple picking as a kid, they really taste like local, fresh, crisp apples.
Yeah, you can't fake it.
Only ingredient in is a fermented apple juice with 1 gram of sugar.
So there's the trick on that. So we have a City Roots original semi-dry, which is a little sweeter. It's got, I think, 7 grams of sugar in it. And that uses Harpoon house yeast. This one uses a wine yeast. Let's say it's more aggressive. And it's able to get at some of the sugars that our yeast doesn't. And it really ferments out all the sugar. So it gives you a very dry, non-sweet product, which coming in for a 12-ounce sample at 97 calories, that's lifestyle right there. And the fact that it's sort of highly carbonated and that dry gives it this seltzer-like quality, even though it's not seltzer. We don't add water to it. It's just apple juice fermented really dry.
Are you surprised by the explosion when it comes to the seltzer category?
So I drank Polar Seltzer and have been drinking Polar Seltzer for as long as I can remember. You know, so once I get rid of, you know, corn syrup soda and diet soda, which is
worse,
apparently really bad for you, whatever that makes that sweetness.
Yeah.
What are your options for a non-alcoholic drink? Well, I'm from the Worcester area. I grew up in Shrewsbury, and you know, I went to Holy Cross, so we could see the Polar factory from our dorms. You know, that, you know, every other year someone was stealing that big inflatable Polar bear on top of the building.
The Crowley family who owns that.
Great family, you know, and just drinking their seltzers and getting used to that flavor. I wasn't surprised that the category took off. When I first had a hard seltzer, it disappointed me because it wasn't Polar. And I was tickled pink when we were able to work with them and come up with Arctic Summer. And it's like, now my seltzer has sugarcane alcohol in it, which Harpoon makes and spikes it in there. And Arctic Summer just was a monstrous hit for us this past summer.
And you can still visit the brewery. You can eat at the beer hall.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on over there?
It's open every day of the week. You know, we got still the best pretzels in the area. We're going to add to the menu. We've also added some here and there, some sort of, you know, acoustic singer-songwriter types that come in and play. We still do our huge events. We've got one coming up March 6th and 7th, Harpoon St. Paddy's Fest. We're always there. We're always busy. And we always encourage people to visit us.
I have a final question. So he was describing the beer as light, crisp, easy to drink, black honey. et cetera, et cetera. What are these characteristics that he said really remind you of your brother? You know, like what when you sip the beer, when you sip the beer, like what reminds you of your brother?
I was thinking more of the crushability, for sure. So I think the target demographics, hockey players, you need to be able to solve for how you can have 10 in a night. But yeah. No, my brother was just about, like, if his greatest gift was just bringing people together. And, you know, when Harpoon, you know, Wags, the Bruins, and the Corey C. Griffin Foundation, it was just, you know, such an obvious, like, I can't imagine how cool he's thinking this is, you know. That a lot of his friends and, you know, have come in together, have a good time, watch some hockey, drink great beer, and all at the same time be, you know, doing good things to the community, especially here in Boston. A no-brainer for us, and we couldn't be more fortunate to be this recipient of, obviously, all the hard work Harpoon and Wags and the Bruins have done, but it's a pretty cool experience.
Well,
I can think of him smiling down.
Some great news that it's doing really well. So a dollar four pack goes to the foundation. We're brewing more to keep up, because we want to have it through, as long as the brewing season lasts, we want to have this beer available.
Well, yeah,
so
and then if things
we
go...
We had to throw in more batches than we originally forecasted for. So thank you to all the fans out there. Thank you to, like, my primary job is to sell to the retailers in the Boston area. Guys, I love you so much. I appreciate everything you do for us. I'm glad you're behind this beer and you're selling a lot of it.
And if things keep going right, you may have to get ready to make a Stanley Cup beer. But I don't want to jinx anything.
Ooh.
All right. Well, get to the Harpoon Brewery and find out about the Corey C. Griffin Foundation. Your website is
CoreyCGriffinFoundation.com or CoreyFest.org, whatever's easier for you.
All right. All right, big thanks to Steve from Davios and Greg from Harpoon and Mike.
I thought you were thanking yourself.
No. Greg from Harpoon.
Pat myself on the back.
I can't reach around there to pat myself on the back.
I know.
As
you got to get on.
I know, you already mentioned that. You already said that. You already said I need a diet. Thank you. I got you.
If you have the latest.
Turn around and I'll examine you and tell you what you need to do as well. All right. And also I want to thank Mike from the Corey C. Griffin Foundation for coming by this week. Next week, Ray Bork joins us from his restaurant in the North End. So we'll be back next week with another episode of Extra Sauce. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.